Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is October 14th, 2024. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and join the weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send it questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up on a scripture reading where we left off last week. We're in the epistle of Peter, 1 Peter, picking up on chapter 4, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 4. For as much then as Christ hath suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves likewise with the same mind. For he that hath suffered in the flesh hath ceased from sin, that he no longer should live the rest of his time in the flesh to the lusts of men, but to the will of God. For the time past of our life may suffice us to have wrought the will of the Gentiles, when we walked in lasciviousness, lusts, excess of wine, revelings, banquetings, and abominable idolatries, wherein they think it strange that ye run not with them to the same excess of riot, speaking evil of you. Who shall give account to him that is ready to judge the quick and the dead? For this cause was the gospel preached also to them that are dead, that they might be judged according to men in the flesh, but live according to God in the Spirit. But the end of all things is at hand. Be ye therefore sober, and watch unto prayer. And above all things, have fervent charity among yourselves, for charity shall cover the multitude of sins. Use hospitality one to another without grudging. As every man hath received the gift, even so minister the same one to another, as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. If any man speak, let him speak as the oracles of God. If any man minister, let him do it as of the ability which God giveth, that God in all things may be glorified through Jesus Christ, to whom be praise and dominion forever and ever. Amen. Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened unto you. But rejoice, inasmuch as ye are partakers of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory shall be revealed, ye may be glad also with exceeding joy. If ye be reproached for the name of Christ, happy are ye, for the Spirit of glory and of God resteth upon you. On their part he is evil spoken of, but on your part he is glorified. But let none of you suffer as a murderer, or as a thief, or as an evildoer, or as a busybody in other men's matters. Yet if any man suffer as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God on this behalf. For the time has come that judgment must begin at the house of God. And if it first begin at us, what shall the end be of them that obey not the gospel of God? And if the righteous scarcely be saved, where shall the ungodly and the sinner appear? Wherefore, let them that suffer according to the will of God commit the keeping of their souls to him in well-doing, as unto a faithful Creator.
Okay, Jan, do we have any questions or announcements tonight?
We have a bunch, John.
Okay.
The first one, and I've been getting this just in questions to me during the week. Are you going to talk about the presentation and order to the United States Supreme Court tonight?
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about, it's up on the website right now. We'll talk a little bit. I'm not too sure how deep I'll go into it, specifics. It's quite a long paper. So we'll address some of it shortly.
Okay. I have nine foreclosure cases filed in federal court with NLA. The judge in federal court is a standstill. I heard you can file a claim against their bond for damages. I heard if the judge gets too many claims on their bond, he will not be insured. Thoughts?
Well, it's difficult to get a bond, to get the information in order to deal with the bond. That's just the beginning of the problem. So they seem to hide it. And, of course, there is a process. We've talked about the process. Which is pretty simple, really, but again, they hide their bonds, they hide their oaths, and they ignore you, and so on. But again, if you have a case going, whether you've lost it or won it, well, if you won it, that's fine, but if you lost it or it just seems to be just taking forever to go through the process, it's going to be on the other side of devolution, which is going to be playing out in any time now in the next couple of months. It could be any day, really, but sometime before the end of this year, absolutely, it will be playing out. We did file the papers we mentioned, was just mentioned a little while ago, which was the presentment with an order to the United States Supreme Court. We filed and served it on Friday the 11th, and it's coming in as under the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And that is the paper. Well, we're going to talk a little more about that in a little while, so I'm not going to really speak much of it now. But again, you know, all your cases can be resurrected, so to speak, once we get courts of justice back. And we do intend and expect on having that to happen. So time is coming.
Next question. What is John's thoughts on the Republic for the United States of America with President Geiger as the interim?
President who?
Geiger. G-E-I-G-E-R.
I don't know who or what that is. Have you ever heard of it?
That's all I have for a question, John. I have no
idea. Yeah, I don't know what Geiger is. I mean, so...
This is the fellow who is president of the United States, according to this group that we met with, us in leadership, John and Jan, you were there.
I'm not going to comment on any of that yet. I know the national leadership is still looking into that, and until we get the final results, then maybe I'll comment on those things.
Okay. Next question. Does NLA know that there are other organizations starting committees of safety?
Well, I've heard of some things, other people talking about it, but I don't know anybody has really organized and prepared the necessary education for people in order to exercise their unalienable right of government by consent through committees of safety, which is really the only way that you can exercise it. I mean, you can... If the government was obedient, of course, we can exercise it, an individual can exercise it. But again, there's powers in numbers, and our founding fathers set up a process which was stolen from us. It's called the committee man process, which the original, of course, name of it, and it's got a few different names, but basically they're called committees of safety. And that's the true free and independent committee man. It is those people who do a lot of work in order to exercise their right of government by consent. They decide who goes on to the ballot. They decide if someone needs to be recalled, and they go through the process of recalling. They're the ones that make sure that we have courts of record opening up, that again, these which is a court of justice, and that it runs properly. They're the ones that maintain the control over their local governments at every level, from the town, village, cities, counties, state, all the way up into the federal. They're the ones that decide on what kind of an education they want for their children from the grassroots level. Everything is done from the grassroots level. And every committee of safety have their own unique problems, as well as problems that they share with other committees of safety, county to county, for instance, or even state to state. But each county also has specific problems that they might have to create a subcommittee in order to deal with those problems, to be maybe get the necessary information and prepare a plan on how to take control of the problem, whatever that might be. Now, the committee men, the statutory committee men, do exist. They've statutorized them. They placed in charge of them party bosses that control them from the, you know, from the grassroots level all the way up to the national level. So they're a committee that has been really captured, a captured committee controlled by statutes and party bosses. And the only thing that they really deal with also is just getting people onto the ballots. So their whole purpose is to either get the criminal on the right or the criminal on the left. They really don't care. On a higher end, they really don't care who gets elected. But of course, because they're all criminals usually, it's controlled, just like the judges are controlled. You're not going to become a judge unless you're a bar attorney and then bar taught. And then at that point, you're totally controlled. And it's the same thing with all of this. But again, I am aware that other people have talked about this. We've learned of different groups early on, you know, maybe just a group here or a group there, starting a committee of safety within a specific area, not necessarily bring it on a national level. I'm not familiar with any group that's trying to bring it at a national level that has prepared the proper education for people to be able to exercise that unalienable right of government by consent. And has worked out some kind of an organization to assist them through committees as correspondents for the purpose of communicating with other counties, and whether they be in their state or even in other states, for whatever purpose that they're battling or trying to protect or bring to, you know, fruition, whatever it might be. All right, next question.
I have a hearing on 10/16. 2024, for the judge to hear why I want my attorney to withdraw as my counsel. John, have you or anyone on the team ever heard such nonsense? I've already granted permission to withdraw, and the attorney e-filed his withdrawal, but the judge wants to know why.
Well, again, you know, they need to maintain control of the criminal activities, and they need to maintain the control of the final results, and so therefore it has to be all by bar attorneys, and that is the problem. A lot of bar attorneys don't realize how evil they really are and participating in that whole process. In any event, they want the like-minded people. They also want to control them. So generally speaking, you know, most cases, everybody already knows who's going to win the case because it is controlled. If there's a decision that this case is going to be won by, the prosecutor, depending on what it is, you know. Of course, there are some cases where there is no interest, maybe an individual against another individual, and who knows, maybe they might decide things on a righteous level, you know, making a good judgment. But generally speaking, we're dealing with, corporations, the status quo, or government agencies, again, both cases, status quo. And that judge is going to maintain that status quo. You are not going to get any kind of a thing going. It would be very rare, occasionally it does happen, but it would be very rare to make a defeat against some major corporation, you know, like the big ones, very, very rare. And also, of course, extremely rare to win anything against the government itself, because they control the courts and the whole thing is totally corrupt, and the whole thing is set for them to win and you to lose. And of course, that's what needs to change. You know, this nation will be as just as its courts are. And our courts are extremely unjust. They're really corrupt. And that's why we have all the problems we have with other nations, the problems with CIA going in and causing problems in many, many other countries, and Just nothing but havoc around the world, constant wars, nothing but havoc. Times are coming that they're going to be changing. So it's very, very close. Don't know exactly when. For a lot of people who may not know where the best place to get some of the news, we did put a page up where we set up for up-to-date news. Okay, just over the weekend, I put together everything up there that I listen to get my information. Also, I found this film called The Outlier, which is very good, so I posted it on this page. It's the only video on this page. But pretty much this is connections, links to different places where you can get reports and information, news that's rock solid. From my perspective, I've been following these people for quite some time. I have found them to be very consistent within their own reporting. I mean, that's how you tell, truth. Truth is self-evident. That's a biblical principle. Just listen long enough, and you could discover truth or not. As time goes on, you look for the contradictions. But not only do we find truth within their own reports, I've also found that we pretty much find a good, connection between these people. In other words, it's very consistent. I mean, sometimes one may pick up something that the others haven't, and occasionally there might be a different perspective, a different point of view. But generally speaking, all of these different reports and programs or podcasts or whatever you want to call them, X22, I make sure that I listen to that every day. He plays 5 or 6 times a day. He's got a report coming out. He's got 2 reports every day. One's financials and one is pretty much what's going on around in the world, particularly, of course, here in the United States, but else places too. And we know SGT Report, the Q News Patriot, Christian Patriot News, Stephen Gardner, Tucker Carlson, Donald Trump, Bongino Report, JRE Clips are pretty good too, so I put that up here. And for health purposes, Dr. Eric Berg, this guy's pretty phenomenal on teaching people on how to really deal with medical problems, a lot of diseases and deficiencies, and basically treat it through vitamins and supplements. So, in any event, this is a good place to get your news if you're looking for real good news. All right, next question.
I received a credit card offer from my local bank in the mail, so I opened it and read through the terms and condition from front to back. And upon the last paragraph on the back side in bold, it states that the credit card agreement contains a jury trial waiver notice that upon enrolling automatically negates any right to a jury trial in the event of litigation between the card holder and the bank. What is strange is that the phrase jury trial and trial by jury are used as if they, the bank, think they are interchangeable. Jury trial is admiralty and trial by jury is common law. My question surrounding all of this is this indirect extortion, and how can unalienable rights be contracted away? At the minimum, statutorily speaking, wouldn't this violate USC 18, 241, and 242, not to mention treason?
Well, this is just one part that you're bringing up of all the criminal activity, organized crime. The mafia has nothing on the federal government. I mean, they total control far, far and above. But in any event, all of this is repugnant to the Constitution. Therefore, it's null and void. I've seen these kind of things written up in different various places, but it's unlawful. It has no weight. It may have some teeth right now because criminals are in charge and we have to get rid of these criminals. The whole stage is set. The idea that they want to set the stage that you can't have a trial by jury, which is common law, which is a court of justice, which is an unalienable right, is just absurd and not possible under justice. But again, if you go into our courts today, there is no justice. If you go into our courts today, there is no Bill of Rights. If you go into the courts today, you're going to lose if you're going up against the status quo. And again, it's very rare. And it's also almost near impossible to get a jury in trial for anything. They constantly make these summary judgments and make their decisions and usually throw you out before you even know it. Every time I go into court, I have to get ready to battle a judge. It's a constant problem. Sometimes I go on for months on end, making battles against the judge because they just don't stop. So, again, we've lost our republic. It's coming at a point where it's time to seize back our republic, and it is going to happen. There's no doubt in my mind anyway. So Trump is working to give back to us the power and the authority that we deserve as the people. We are the sovereigns. We're the lawmakers. We make the law. We decide the law. We the people, ordained and established the law. It's called the Constitution. And we've laid out the powers and the authorities that we've given them the authority, our representatives, to take care of that business. We've also set up the courts. We've vested these judges to do the right thing, to be obedient to the law, to honor their oaths. And the whole thing is corrupt and lost. And thank God for Donald Trump at this point, who's going to give it back. And therefore, we can have government by consent of the people again. The problem is the people don't know how to have government by consent. That's the problem. And that, of course, is what the purpose of National Liberty Alliance is all about, to teach the people how to have government by consent, to get a proper education and understanding. You know, our heritage is in the law. If you don't know the law, you don't know your heritage. You don't know when they're breaking the law if you don't know the law. And the law is pretty simple. It's laid out in just a few pages in a small booklet called the Constitution. You can get a copy of that in many places. But in any event, there's not much to it. Everything else is common law. Common law is common sense, that which is right and just. Common law is built of maxims. Water does not go uphill. No one can argue that unless you put a pump to it, of course, you know. So common law is very simple. We the people, the way it's set up, common law is set up, we the people decide whether we will permit an indictment or not. They got to come beg for that or ask for that, shall I say. And then we the people decide whether we're going to give them, an indictment or not. Of course, right now every grand jury is stacked with puppets, and people don't realize it. They're threatened not to go beyond what they allow them to go beyond. And they go to pretty much extremes, to the point I know of one person who went to jail, who was just refusing to participate. But, of course, they were doing some other things that were silly and caused their own problems also. But we the people decide whether someone is innocent or guilty through a regular petit jury. We the people decide the facts and the law. That's common law. And if we don't like the law, we can nullify the law. And any time a law comes into play outside of common law, like statutes or codes, it's only because the individual that might be being tried might be involved in some kind of a commercial activity or maybe something with the government, working for a government agency. So therefore, they're under those codes and statutes, and they must operate under what our representatives have written up for them to be controlled. And there's a lot of great statutes out there, of course. You know, for instance, I think it's USC 3 is what controls the president. There's like 1,000 pages of information written up by the legislators empowering the president with certain powers and authorities and controls and so on. And all of that is proper. And we should use those codes and those particular statutes and regulations in order to control government agencies and control our courts too, because our judges are under the same thing, just like Congress is under the same control and any other commercial activity. So all of that, of course, is proper and just, but we need to really understand how this whole process works, and so the jury can nullify any law that's brought up. It's gone. They also are supposed to get to decide not only the law and the facts, but also to decide what the penalty might be. And that penalty would be with an eye on restitution to the injured party. None of that is available to us today, nor has it been for quite some time. Everything I pretty much said, they have destroyed and hidden and cloaked our courts of justice with courts of injustice. We're about to get it back, but, you know, as Benjamin Franklin said, you know, we have a republic, if you can keep it. And to keep a republic requires a certain education. Jefferson called it a proper education. So you need to understand who we are as a people. You need to understand the history of our nation. You know, we have the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers. If we have any concerns or questions concerning the Constitution, we go back to the original debates and decisions by our founding fathers, all found in that area, the Federalist and the Anti-Federalist Papers. So, okay, next question.
In regards to the Pettit jury, I notice a lot with the juries anymore convicting on majority vote, say 9-3, not unanimously. How is that? Where can I cite historical concrete evidence that the jury is only able to convict unanimously and address this to the courts and jurors?
For someone to be found guilty of anything in a criminal case, it has to be unanimous. So one jury can hold up the whole thing. They call it a hung jury. And there's no there's no such thing as a hung jury. You know, the officer of the court, which is a magistrate, he might be a judge, but he's got to have his magistrate hat on if he's in a court of justice, you know, a courtroom under the common law. He can't make any decisions, but he's like a traffic cop, and he will certify and seal the decision of the jury and pass it off to the sheriff for execution to the specifics of whatever the jury decided. And that's the way it's supposed to go. But if a jury comes in and claims, well, hey, you know, we can't get this decision, it's up to that magistrate to say, well, okay, go back into the room until you work it out. One way or another, you got to come back with a decision, and that's it, final. No matter how long you spend in that room, you need to come back with a decision. And they could come to the point and say, we're just not going to get anywhere, so we're going to have to find the person not guilty. Because it is required to have all 12. It must be uniform. Basically, under common law, you can't have someone making one claim that they're guilty and everyone else innocent, or vice versa, you know, everyone guilty and vice versa, everyone innocent, you know, everyone says they're innocent and the other one guilty. No, it's got to be unanimous, because there's an imbalance there, and there has to be a consistency. And the bottom line is, if you can't get 12 people to agree that there is something stuck on that, then the person walks, it's over. And they can't be retried again. You know, that's also part of common law, and it's also written up in, I believe, in the Bill of Rights. Okay, next.
Okay, this next one pertains to the long 2.5-page proclamation, affirmation question that you addressed at the very end of last Monday night's session. And it says, I have a few questions regarding criminal case. Number one, if the jury were instructed by the judge to follow the law as she gives them, as she decides the law, would that mean they lost jurisdiction?
Well, what happens, they call it a runaway jury when a jury goes up against the judge and does not go forward with the will of the judge. I mean, what are we there for if we have to follow the will of another individual? How can we follow our conscience if we have to follow the will of some caped individual who is taught by the bar, which is really taught to destroy? You know, the purpose of the bar is to destroy this republic. It always has been. That was the purpose it was created for, and it started its effects here in this nation before we became a nation. The bar came into the colonies in 1750 for the sole purpose to destroy our common law courts, just like they were doing and had pretty much done in England already. and they just couldn't have the colonies here, which is under British rule, having their common law, which would give them power and authority over the king. And that's the problem. So, you know, they came in and started creating their chancery courts, where the judge would get to decide everything, judge, jury, and executioner, pretty much. They decide it all. They don't need a jury. After all, they got the will of the bar in there, which is the will, ultimately, of the elite, the powers that be, whoever controls all these things. And we know that the world is controlled by just maybe 100 families or so, roughly. So, again, nothing has changed, nothing new under the sun. This has been going on for a very long time. The United States was the first nation to break away from that, of course. But we've been recaptured, and it's time for us to be free again, free and independent. And it's coming up. As President Trump said in his inauguration speech when he was elected the first time, he was elected not to take power, but to give power back to the people where it belongs. And that's where we're coming up to, that point. These last, 8 years have been really set to play for the sole purpose of doing that. The first 4 years was to set the stage and the controls behind the scenes. The next 4 years was to reveal to the people, because a lot of people were sleeping. We've seen a lot of people on different news medias, particularly on Fox, for instance. I don't know about any others, but, a lot of those people have woken up, even though they're still under control. But we have Carlson that has come from there. You know, we have numerous people that have come from there, broken away, and do their own podcast now. But they're still reporting some good truth, but they're still under controls. There's certain things they can't say or do, and when they do get totally out of control, they get fired. But we're gaining back the control, and the people are starting to see it. I don't know where we really are, but I heard as much as 70% of the people have pretty much been awakened. And that might be true, especially when you start to look at the different individuals that have left the Democratic Party, who was somebody of character and somebody of recognition, and have joined forces. You got Kennedy, for instance, is one of them, quite a few others. So you got a lot of people that are waking up on the Democrat side. Finally, the people of color have woken up to realize that Democratic Party is really a con job to them, and it always has been. It's just the whole thing is about maintaining the power, the control of the black people and other minorities for the sole purpose of their vote, so they can bring their criminals in. And they never free them. They never stop. It's them that continue to cause this problem between the races. You also have Musk, who's pretty followed up on X and now pretty much everywhere. He's going talking in a lot of places right now, and he's got a huge, huge following. A lot of people are waking up, so I think maybe 70% is maybe a good number. I think in the next couple of weeks to the next month or so at most, the rest of them wake it up. But you'll always have maybe 10% deadheads. You're not going to get them no matter what. They're just totally lost, totally asleep, whatever the case may be. I don't know. But in any event, to get that other 20% is going to cost us some real serious problems. It's going to be violence in the streets. There's going to be upheavals in our cities. Threat of nuclear war. All of this is about to happen, and that's going to be the final wake-up notice for the other 20%. It's coming. It's coming down the pike. A lot of things are being revealed right now with Hollywood, what's going on there with pedophilia and a lot of serious problems. And that's just the beginning. That's just the beginning. What is about to be revealed is going to be on. Also, people are going to have a hard time believing it and a hard time receiving it. But the evidence will be there. It'll be seen. And reckoning is coming. So it's close. Next question.
If I did not see any of the documents filed in the case until after trial, how can I bring that up to address that? Through appeal or writ?
Well, you can go through the appeal, of course. That is the process you're going to have to do at this side of things. I mean, there are writs that can be done, but they don't have any respect for the writs, which is the power of the people, the power of the king, the power of the sovereign. And we, the people, are the sovereign. Okay? So they ignore that. We file writs because we're revealing the hypocrisy. We're revealing the criminal activities. We're revealing the fact that this is a conspiracy within the federal judiciary particularly. So our writs, even though they go ignored, is still in our case and will resurrect and be in place when final judgment and justice comes. A lot of these, every single federal judge must be discharged, every single one of them. I think many of them are going to go to jail. I think that's going to be taken care of by the military and dealing with the enemies, foreign and domestic. So we got a lot of domestic enemies. We know there's over 450 indictments out there, and I think there's a lot more than that happening. So a lot of judges will be gone away with, and either they'll run, commit suicide, or be arrested. But those who have not gotten to that point, well, they have to leave. And that's one of the things that our presentment is making that case. They got to go. They have performed so much evil. They have destroyed so many lives. They've destroyed families. They've held up what they want to hold up. They have covered up our courts of justice. They've denied us our Constitution, our unalienable rights. They've denied us our courts. And they need to go. The other thing is that they're not going to be able to bear the weight of all of the cases that are going to be brought up against them. I know, as for me, I know of at least 150 to 200 judges we're going to be going after, specifically for monetary reasons. And it's going to break them. They don't have enough money to be able to pay the restitution to the people and the lives that they've destroyed. They just don't have it. These people, they need to be relieved from their duty. They need to be really go to jail, in my opinion. But and a lot of them will. Maybe we'll bring up criminal charges. We have brought up a lot of criminal charges against quite a few judges. We've brought up a lot of indictments. We've shown a lot of cases where they totally just ignore us, shut us off, don't answer, don't even bother with the cases, throw everything out. You know, lots of cases like that. So I know myself, I have about 5 personal cases, my own personal cases. I intend on getting justice at some point in time in each and every one of them, going after every judge and certain lawyers that are involved in that whole process and so on. So again, justice is coming, not far away, very close now. Next question.
Can there be multiple DAs throughout the case? For example, I see a few different names in the papers that were filed, and also different names from those that are signatured on the bottom.
Well, first of all, there's only one district attorney that is really there for, let's say, the state district attorney. Same thing with the federal, and also on a county level. And everyone else is an assistant. Okay, district attorney, DA. They can pick up each other's case, I would presume. I don't see a problem with that. In the sense that if one, hey, I'm going on vacation, take care of this case, whatever, they just change. That's their business within their own, group there as far as these attorneys are concerned. But again, anybody who's going to want to practice in a court of justice has got to leave the bar. And they also have to learn common law because at that point they can't pull the civil law against the people. We're not here under the civil law. We're under the common law. Equity, which brings us to legislative law, which still is under common law because we're a common law nation. So that's why we have the ability to nullify anything. If it is outside of consistency with the common law, then we nullify it. We just discard it. And that's the power of the people. People don't realize the power of the people. We have an extreme amount of power. The problem is you can't exercise it from one person. You have to have a group of people working this out, and we have to be throughout the whole nations in order to support ourselves. and to support each one of the different committees of safety. But again, you know, we are the sovereign, and once the courts of justice are back and the people take control of their counties from the grassroots level, and all of the different political subdivisions within that and above that, you know, that meaning being, you know, you're looking at the village courts, the town courts, the city courts, the county courts, and then of course the state courts and the state's government, the county government, and then you're looking at, of course, you get into the federal government and so on. But again, everything is controlled by the grass, should be controlled by the grassroots. But once we take control, and only the people can do that, and it has to be across America, once we take control, one person will be able to get up there and get their justice and make their demands and control the system that they have every right to control. And again, there can be no decisions within a court of record other than that of the jury. There's no summary judgments permitted in a trial by jury, which is under the common law. So we need to just take this back, and that's what we're about to do that. But again, if the people don't get up and get involved in their committees of safety, and we don't resurrect that power at that authority at the grassroots level, we'll be back here again. It's only a matter of time, maybe not in our lifetime, but in our children's lifetime or our children's children. Sometime down the line, evil will take back control, because that's just the way this world is. There's the prince and power of the air, and evil people will take back control of this country again, unless the people stop it by exercising their right of government by consent. Next.
The facts of the case weren't really facts. Can I correct the writ of error, and would I file that in the same case or to the court of record or court of appeals? Excuse me.
Well, you know, again, you would want to start with a court of record within your court there itself, where the judge may have taken certain powers and authorities, and you want to make that correction. You could file it, or you should file it right in that court, which is a writ of error. They're not going to recognize it. They're going to ignore it or do something. They're just not going to allow you to have any kind of power with that paper, but it becomes part of the record, which they eventually will try to kind of erase as time goes on, because they don't like those things in the record. But in any event, that's where it starts. You make your case. Also, you ask for reconsideration. You lay out the reason why, and you can demand more specifics on how that judge came about to be you making these decisions, number one. Number two, by what power and authority do they act? So a writ quo warranto could also be applied to that, because they don't have the power or the authority to make any decision over any person. How is it that the servant can judge the master? Just think about that. You see, that's why we have common law. We're judged by our peers, and our peers, you know, take an oath, and they're to operate under their conscience and out of their hearts. And God tells us that he wrote the laws into the hearts of men. We know when a wrongdoing was done. We don't need a law to tell us that. You lay that case out before people. People will discuss it, figure it out, and come to a conclusion. We can also know exactly what needs to be done to restore that person. Where the courts we have right now, they're not interested in restoring anyone. They're interested in making whatever money they can out of this whole thing. By sending someone to prison, they make money. There's all kinds of money involved in that. By fining people, sometimes large fines. Look what they've done with Trump, you know, this huge multi-million dollar fine. I forget how many millions. I think it was a couple of $100 million or something. On a case that they had no power, no authority. Matter of fact, just recently was just thrown out by the Supreme Court, stating that the whole thing was a sham. But what are they going to do with all that money? You think it goes to support the people that might have been, in Trump's case, of course, there was no injured party, but the whole thing was a sham. But, you know, in any case where, let's say, there's a $10,000 fine, where does that money go to? It goes to the government. It goes into the pockets of these individuals. Everybody gets a piece of the action, it seems. Corruption at every level. It's really serious. But anyway, next question. Jan, did you mute yourself? Did we lose Jan?
Yes.
There he goes. Okay.
Let's just say they got jurisdiction by plea or agreeing first, because defense's own counsel said it would be more favorable, even though the defendant pled not guilty for all counts prior. Can defendant raise that same issue back up and argue the plea again?
On the other side of devolution, absolutely. The whole thing was a fraud. They had no power, no authority. They didn't have jurisdiction. They're under civil law, not common law. Civil law is Babylonian law. It could be traced back. It goes to Roman law, Justinian law, then Babylonian law. Each one is just a repackaging. We call it civil law. At some point, it's called maybe municipality law. It's all the same thing, to enslave and to control the people, to build a statutory prison to control the people, and to fleece them of every dollar they can get, just like the medical system with all this crazy pharmaceuticals and controls over what you can get and what you can't get as far as medical services are concerned and so on. The whole thing, they have destroyed everything. They are the destroyers of the world, the Leviathan. Ultimately, collectively, they are Leviathan that the Bible speaks about, the evil of this world controlled by Satan, the prince and power of the air. So, you know, all these things can be brought back up at some point because the whole thing was a fraud. There's so much restitution that has to be made. And I think, generally speaking, there's going to be across-the-board restitution to all the people of America, but not just here in this country, because the whole world has been defrauded. These people control probably 80 or 90% of everything. They hold all the major corporations, all the major news medias, which are also corporations. They got all the gold, the silver, the islands. They got, you know, homes, houses, properties. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. And when they get arrested, all that, you know, when you catch a person who robbed, as Trump has made this point on a couple occasions, you know, if they catch a person who robbed the jewelry store, the diamonds of a store, well, he gets caught, you've got to give him back. Well, you've got to give it back, okay? You know, we don't have a debt. You know, everybody thinks we have this multi-trillion dollar, billion, million trillion, even higher than that maybe, I don't know, but trillions and trillions of dollars that there's a debt. Well, who do we owe this debt to? We owe it to them, the evil, those people who have defrauded us. So we owe no debt. There is no debt to be owed to anybody. But there's a lot to be seized, trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars to be seized from these people through assets, gold, silver, liquidity. I mean, all this stuff, collectively speaking. Well, what are they to do with that? I mean, let's take Trump from his position. What's he to do with that? Are they going to keep it in the government? Well, what justice is that? No, we've been injured. Every single person in America has been injured. I've been injured all my life. I've come to realize that because I have been prevented from getting certain places or certain things as far as, you know, monetary system is concerned. You know, every time you move and start to get better, inflation grows, things get worse, more taxes, more pressure, more government licensing. It just goes on and on and on. Waste of time by the government, and, you know, from my perspective as a contractor. And so as you're making more money, you lose more than you're making. You know, it just goes on and on and on. So I've been injured all my life. Everybody has been injured all their life. We haven't had courts of justice. We've been fleeced all the time. We're in a statutory prison. So where's all this money going to go? Well, it's got to go back to the people. We need to be restored, because that's the only sound solution. And it's not just the people here in America. There are people all over the world who's been injured. But we have been the greatest taken from us, all this stuff put on our backs and all of these things that they have fleeced from us. So justice is coming, and from that standpoint alone may be sufficient enough, and everyone else should just go to jail or end up on the end of a short rope. That's going to be up to juries or military tribunals in many cases. Okay, next question.
If the case went to trial by jury, but they're using statutes and codes. The sentencing happened, but it's still an appeal. And they told me last review hearing, if I don't start doing what I'm supposed to do with their probation terms, I would have to do the rest of my sentence in jail. And I had to get that started by the next hearing, which was in 10 days, or else I'm going to jail. What can I do to stop them in their tracks?
There's absolutely nothing you could do to stop them in their tracks. The only thing you could do is do the best you can to comply where you have no choice. You've already made your case. You made your point. Now just be cooperative. It's only a couple of months before we get to the other side of things. And then at that point, then you can go revisit all this. Because there has, in my opinion, I mean, there has been from time to time various places where a runaway jury actually came and ran away and did the right thing. And they were unable to control them. You know, 20 years ago it was harder for them to control the jury when they went astray. But these last 20 years or so now, they got so much control they'll actually put these people in jail if they create havoc within the system. So we have to be careful with that. We don't want to go to jail. You know, look, I've got a driver's license, and I maintain it. I don't really need that because I don't do anything commercially anymore, so I don't really need that. But I know if I get rid of that driver's license and I get stopped, I'm going to have a problem, maybe even go to jail. You know, you can't get a bank account without a Social Security number. You shouldn't have to have a Social Security number. And there's a lot of things. So it's the same thing in the courts. You know, remember, it doesn't, whether there's a jury or not, once that judge has taken control of the jury to say, you know, you get to decide the facts, but I will tell you what the law is. And if they broke the law, you have to apply what the law says. When a judge does that, he just changed jurisdiction into a jurisdiction's unknown. The proper, you know, thing that the judges to let them to say is to give them, to empower them, that you have all the power of decision. You are the lawmakers. You could decide, you know, whether this person is innocent or guilty. If there's a law to be applied, you can make that decision on whether you like that law or not. And you get to decide what the rest, what the penalty would be with an eye on restitution. That's a properly informed jury, a fully informed jury. You know, we wrote two handbooks, which you can get up at nationallibertyalliance.org. Underneath, if you go to underneath Start a Committee of Safety and you come down to handbooks, videos, and tools, you'll find two handbooks that are for the juries. One is for the petit jury and the other one is for the grand jury. Here's a grand jury handbook. It's 30 pages. It's a PDF download. Or you can get the handbook, you know, pocket handbook, and go, you can find those books under Welcome, Books by John Duresh, and you click on that and you'll find all these books. But you could download it for free with PDF and read through that. This is what the juries will be orientated with once we take back control of our courts, where the people need to take control of the courts, not judges, no bar attorneys. They need to leave. You know, judges and attorneys outside of the bar now, who have to be obedient to the common law, they get to work in the equity courts. They don't get to come into our courts, although attorneys can come into our courts to defend or even prosecute, but they have to obey the common law, not the civil law. But to properly inform a jury, a grand jury, that's what we wrote the handbook for. Also, that we've written the common law petit jury handbook. Again, that's 41 pages, and that'll orientate them. And again, if you go up to Books by John Naresh under Welcome, you'll find these books where you can purchase them. These links will give you some information. And, for instance, the Common Law Petit Jury Handbook, click on that. Takes you right up to a place where you can make the purchase. But again, you don't have to necessarily buy them. A lot of people like them. I like the pocket handbooks. I like the pocket constitutions. I always carry one around with me when I go to any kind of an event. And these handbooks are really good, and I kind of like the handbooks. But again, you can get it in PDF downloads. So the people get to decide all these things. Next.
Can I challenge jurisdiction of that court for denial of due process? When I challenge jurisdiction, do I file that in the same court and case or court of appeals?
Well, when you challenge jurisdiction, the law says it has to be decided. Okay, so that means it has to be heard. And you know, for instance, I've been in a court, for instance, on town levels, where you challenge the jurisdiction, you have jurisdiction, has to be decided, and the judges say, well, I decided that we have jurisdiction. I said, well, you didn't have a hearing. I'm the only one with an affidavit on file, an affidavit unrebutted, rules the decision of this court, and the other side wrote nothing. So I should be the one that should be won. You don't have jurisdiction. Of course, they don't hear about that. Then you have to move it into an appellate court for that process. But they should recuse themselves, and you should make the point in the court that, look, if you think you have jurisdiction and that's your belief, then you have to recuse yourself. You have to have an open mind and look at the papers to decide whether you have jurisdiction or not. And if you're incapable of doing that, then you need to recuse yourself. So they don't have jurisdiction. You're in a place who I refer to as jurisdictions unknown, and that's where you're at. That's the problem. Next.
The appellate court that the case is going through is called Sixth District Appellate Program. Is that even a real appeals court? I'm in Santa Cruz, California.
Well, they have different names for different things. You know, here in New York State, we call our courts the Supreme Court. You know, so the state court is the Supreme Court, okay? And then you go through the appellate process, and you know, you got the Court of Appeals and the appellate court, so different states call them different things, and that's fine as long as they mean and do the same thing is the key, okay? Again, a lot of problems have occurred because of chancery courts that they've created here in the United States. And the chancery court was created, again, for the sole purpose to destroy our republic. Okay, so they have chancellors. If you go to Pennsylvania, they actually call them chancery courts, and they actually call these judges chancellors. And I'm sure they do that in other states, too. I'm just aware of Pennsylvania because it's close by, and I've just had a little experience with communications in those areas. But generally speaking, again, the name isn't that important unless the name defines itself in such a way that takes us away from common law. But as long as the structure is proper, that's the key. So, was there a second part to that question? That was a short question. Read that question again, because I think there was something I missed.
No, we'll have to back up here. No, I can't bring it back up.
Okay, next question. I probably got the whole thing, but go ahead. Next question.
Next question, and I'm not sure where the question is. Wouldn't it be helpful to quote Westlaw for the purpose of education and governance so that the ambiguities are removed from America's founding documents? In constitutional law, statutes that contain ambiguous language are void for vagueness. The language of such laws is considered so obscure and uncertain that a reasonable person cannot determine from a reading what the law purports to command or prohibit. This statutory ambiguity deprives the person of the notice requirement of due process of law, and therefore renders the statute unconstitutional. And that's from West's Encyclopedia of American Law, 2nd edition, copyright 2008, the Gale Group, and so forth. And then there's a comment here about Connecticut, Massachusetts.
Well, let me answer that part of the question first. Okay. Every statute is a violation. Every statute is repugnant when it's being applied upon the people. There is no statute to be applied upon the people. Okay. And, you know, first of all, when a law is broken, a sheriff who should be, of course, skilled in the common law, skilled in understanding how the court system works, and that's why we should require our sheriffs to take the courses, court access in the common law, or if they can find a place somewhere else, of course, where they can take a course to be able to learn the common law and the difference between law and equity. So anybody we elect for any position in government should be required to take these courses, and because right now they bring us under the statutory process. But Westlaw, really generally, basically speaking, my understanding with Westlaw, and I'm sure there are other things out there, but they really rely a lot on decisions in the courts, and all too often, unfortunately, they also record trial courts. And when trial courts rely on trial courts, that's problematic. We can only rely to use anything that'll be helpful to us from the Supreme Courts. And even there, some more, a lot lately, of course, is repugnant because they've been so far off base. They put people in these positions on these federal levels and even on the state levels that are just incompetent. They're not competent enough to be able to, not educated enough and competent enough to be a judge. But in any event, whenever there's a judge up there ruling over you, unless you've given them the authority to do it, because you can go in on a contract dispute maybe and you say, hey, it's a lot easier because I'm going to win, whatever. You should be able to win. You got an appellate process there. But that's only if they're operating under courts of justice, you know. And right now they're not operating under courts of justice. But the bottom line, though, is court cases that they use, and they use a lot of trial court cases, which is called comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y, which they really are making their own law. So when they really do a real good evil job down on the bottom line there at the trial level, and they get a decision that's so far off base, and then they apply that as law in other cases because your case is similar. And common law says, you know, things similar is not necessarily the same thing. Nothing is similar. Every case is unique unto its own. It's got its own facts and its own law to be applied. In this case, of course, common law, which is common sense. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. Okay, that's what common law is, common sense off of the heart. Okay, we judge from our hearts. And the law is written in our hearts. So Westlaw is not a place to go. Any statutory process is not who we are as a people, shouldn't be in any of our courts. Arbitration could be good as a contractor. You know, arbitration I found was very helpful because you get an engineer or an architect or someone who understands what's going on and can look at the records and the papers and get a good picture of what's happening and then look at what the dispute is and make a real good decision. And that's arbitration. So you want someone who has the understanding of the skills and what's involved and whatever the case may be. And that could be true also in a court if we had just justices. But we don't have just justices. And until that day comes, I'd stay away from it. Wouldn't let them decide anything. All right, next. If you wanted to finish, there was another part of the question, I think.
Well, yes, John. They make the point.
Just as a note here, anybody wants to get into the queue, it's a *6 and a 1 if you're on a phone. And if you're on an app or a browser, there should be a button to get into the queue. Right now, there's no one in the queue, so you can get into the queue. Okay, back to you, Jen.
Okay, they make the point that 4 of the state constitutions start out with we, the people. And that would be Connecticut, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, and Virginia, whereas the National Archives catalog does not use a comma after we.
Doesn't use what?
Say again, John?
Doesn't use what after we? Comma? Reread that because I didn't understand it.
Well, those 4 states put a comma after we, the people of the United States, in the preamble.
You have a better English knowledge than I do as far as punctuation is concerned. Does that make a difference, do you think, putting a comma there?
It doesn't to me, but who knows?
Yeah. Hey, I don't know that it makes a difference, but go ahead. What's with the question?
So then it goes into some questions about the individual amendments. During Reconstruction, which 13th article of amendment ceded our natural state into 28 U.S.C. 3002, Section 15, 4th Amendment citizenship, and so on.
Okay, I don't know what that means when they say the 4th Amendment citizenship. I'm not sure what the question is, to be honest. You want to try reading that again? Maybe I can listen a little better. Phone app, okay. Yep. Well, let's give it a try. Read it one more time, because there were a few things I can maybe make a point on anyway. So,
during Reconstruction, which 13th article of amendment ceded our natural state into 28 U.S.C. 3002, in Section 15, I guess, Fourth Amendment citizenship?
No, Fourth Amendment citizenship.
Excuse me, 14th Amendment, Justin.
Yeah, 14. That is much more sense. The 14th Amendment didn't make any real change at all. It was just trying to make a point, although it depends on who is interpreting it, because they like to change the meaning of words, the meaning of things, and give it a different meaning. Okay? When we read anybody that is being naturalized, okay, in the United States, okay, and we are subject to the jurisdiction thereof. The jurisdiction that we're subject to is the law, okay? There are two jurisdictions in the United States, law and equity. We, the people, are under the jurisdiction of law. That's where we go into our courts and get the law, which is common law. Equity, of course, is legislative law, where people who are under certain controls of regulations, statutes, and codes for the sole purpose maybe of operating certain commercial activities, or if they're operating even illegal commercial activities, and also government agencies that are also operating, they need to be under regulations. They need to be under codes. You see, this is where we gave them the power to really, you know, control themselves, okay, in the sense of laying out the structure of regulations, what they're allowed to do, what they can't do, and how things, you know, is sort of like, how they can operate within the business, you know. And of course, statutes are laws, and they can end up being a criminal situation, too. But again, there is no power or authority over the people outside of law, and that's the key. So when we read, for instance, the 14th Amendment, all persons born or naturalized in the United States, and remember, you know, if you're born in the United States, you're automatically a citizen of the United States. You're a citizen of the state you live in, wherever you decide to live. But you also get all the powers, the authorities, and the rights as you cross over a line into another state and something takes place there and you have to go into a court. You have all the power, the authority as a citizen of that state as any other state, because we're citizens of the United States. I know a lot of people teach a lot of things about that only because they have distorted and tried to give a new meaning and a different meaning to being a citizen, okay? But we're under a citizen of our republic, one nation under God, indivisible. And so we're a citizen of the republic. And so we're under the common law. And we also, if you read the Constitution, we've empowered the authority of the federal government to make people citizens but through naturalization. In the Constitution, the word citizen is used 7 times. So our founding fathers had no problem using that word. We're a citizen of a common law republic. That's who we are as a people. And we should not allow them to steal the meanings of words like the word citizen. But it goes on, a person born and naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction, common law thereof, are citizens of the United States, any state you go into, and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges, which more than a privilege, I don't like that word, and immunities of the citizens. But from another standpoint, we can appreciate privileges being given to us by God, okay? But we don't have any privileges that they've given us. So the immunities of the citizen of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Brings us right back to the Fourth Amendment. Nor deny of any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws, which is the law of the land, which brings us right back to common law, the natural law. So I don't find a problem with the 14th Amendment, if that's what they're trying to bring up on this. And again, I know there's a lot of people out there teaching a lot of things, but they just haven't done enough homework yet. And, you know, I was guilty of this, too, in the beginning when I first started getting this. You know, there's nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action. Nothing more dangerous. And in the beginning, when I was trying to figure things out and trying to learn, listening to other people, but, you know, by God's mercy, I've learned a long time ago, sort of what Reagan says, trust but verify. Yeah, I'm not happy with receiving things unknown just off the cuff from people. I'll take it with a grain of salt and go search it out. And after a while, trying to understand the difference between law and equity and different things, you know, I was holding a certain position that was in error, which is a lot of the sort of the movement of the man on the land stuff, you know. And of course, that got corrected through education. That's the only way you can correct that, is through education, doing research, finding the truth out for yourself, digging deep. So there's nothing more dangerous than ignorant inaction. And I say again, I speak to myself first. I was guilty of that. But there's a lot of people out there that are just under misunderstanding of things, and they're coming to conclusions in different areas off of false foundations. And that's a problem. You know, when you look at the things that we put together here, we back ourselves up with where we get our authorities. We're filled with lots of footnotes, which will give the authorities. All of our papers are filled with footnotes, everything. So, you know, but we probably have error somewhere. From time to time we discover it and we correct it. But again, there are a lot of problems with this 14th Amendment thing. I used to agree the 14th Amendment was a problem, but we do also have the 13th Amendment, the original 13th Amendment, which was covered up and changed, and when the 13th Amendment that we have was broken up into two amendments, 13th and the 14th Amendment, and so therefore they were able to hide the 13th Amendment with something else, and what we need to do, and we cover this in our presentment to the United States Supreme Court, and order, we cover that issue, that they need to address the fact that the 13th and the 14th Amendment was originally always the 14th Amendment, and the 13th Amendment, which was ratified in 1818 or 1819, I think it's 1818, okay, that was ratified back then, that needs to be come to surface and understood what that means, and that means that no bar attorney can have any power or authority anywhere in our government, certainly not in a court of law. And that's what the 13th Amendment, the original 13th Amendment is. And I know they didn't talk about the 13th Amendment, but I thought he'd bring that up. Okay, next question.
I'm going to read this one backwards.
Okay.
It's first, the 13th Amendment, Section 1. Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for a crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. That was Section 1. Section 2, Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. Then it says, all legislative powers granted herein shall be vested in a Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and a House of Representatives.
Well, where are they getting that from? I'm losing that. The 13th Amendment, I followed that. What are you reading now? You read first 1 and 2, right?
All legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and a House of Representatives.
Okay, you're not in the 13th. Where are you reading from? You're reading in Article 1, Section... I'm not sure
section
what section.
One. Yeah.
Section, you know, Article yeah. 1. Okay, what... Okay.
Now, the question with that is, John, does the 13th Amendment allow for voluntary servitude? First, and then the second question is, who has the power to legislate slavery and enforce voluntary servitude by coercion?
Well, we're talking involuntary versus voluntary. Is that what the person is saying?
Well, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, well, you can volunteer to do anything you want. You're free and independent. You want to do something for someone else, that's your business. Involuntary servitude is the problem, of course. Let's see. Okay, so you were read Article 1, because I thought you were going right into 13, and I did hear you read 13, which should be 14, no. Actually. No? You talked about slavery.
Well, it isn't the real 13, right?
Yeah, right. So you said neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except in a punishment of crime whereof a party shall have duty convicted, shall exist within the United States. Or any place subject to their jurisdiction. So it says neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime. So that's one place where they can, in other words, they can make use of the people in the prison, for instance, to do certain work. And of course, some of that work, I know there's a prisons here in New York, I know a couple of prisons particularly one, where they have animals and they put crops out and they plant food and it's all for themselves. So I mean that's work. They got to work for their own food, but they also may do other work that is beneficial one way or another to the people, and they get they get paid for that. You know, it's a very minimum salary. I mean, it could be $1 an hour or something. You know, with conflation, you know, I don't know where it would be, but you know, something like that. And all of that is what's saying it is legal. Okay. So when you go back to Article 1, all legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in the Congress of the United States and shall consist of the Senate and the House and of Representatives. Then you read another article, another section. What was the next section, if you recall?
Which section do you want now, the second section?
Well, I read Article 1, Section 1 is what I first read. I just read. Okay, then there's Section 2. Were you reading that? The House of Representatives shall be composed of?
Section 2 says Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation.
Okay, that's true. Yeah. So what's the question about all that? Is there a question?
Well, the first was about voluntary servitude, which...
Involuntary is what they really meant, yeah.
The amendment states involuntary, but this person right. wants to know if it's okay to have voluntary.
Well, and I think they really meant to write involuntary. I think
No, they didn't.
No, they didn't.
John, I can guarantee you that.
Okay.
Yep. All right. Then the second thing is, who has the power to legislate slavery and enforce voluntary servitude by coercion?
Well, slavery was never approved, But the involuntary servitude, which would be a form of slavery, maybe, I don't know. I don't know that you could say that, because it's really a form of punishment and paying for their own way. Because look at, if you give some kind of a job to the inmates that is productive to society, that is a way. But of course, sometimes they go far on another side of that and really. Corporations get lost and involved in it, so I guess I've never traced all that stuff down, but I'm sure that's what's happening. But generally speaking, if it's given back to society and they're in prison, that's proper. But first, the other thing is no one should be in prison unless it's a situation of violence, serious violence. I mean, people in prison that don't belong in prison, they need to be out of prison and being restoring the people that they've injured. And bringing back to society from outside of prison, because common law is not big on prison. But anyway, is there any other part to that question or something?
Nope, that's all the questions, John.
Boy, we spent a lot of time on that.
Yes.
But okay, we do have a few people in the queue. We'll take them in a minute or so. But before we do that, I just want to quickly go through a few things that people may not realize. You know, if we go back to our front page here, and this is pretty much on almost every page, there are very few pages where this is not the case. So on the right side of our pages, this information is pretty much consistent throughout our website. But if you come down and scroll down, you'll see come to a place where it says recent content. And I'm going to suggest to people they should pay attention to this because, you know, if there's anything new posted up, well, that's where you're going to find out, okay? So I've posted a lot of new stuff just recently, and over time, of course, and others have also. But that's good information for the latest stuff and the updates on the website and so on and so forth. Another thing I'd like to remind the people is that people should get involved in our sheriff, join our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. Okay, so people should read through this and get their sheriff the book, Government by Consent. Get them started up on that, and hopefully at some point you'll build a committee of safety and you'll remind the sheriff of that book. And, you know, we have a process which maybe over the courses of the next couple of weeks we'll play a short PowerPoint video that I put together. It's about 20 minutes long, concerning your relationship with the sheriff, how to bring the sheriff on board, and how to control that sheriff in order to be obedient to the Constitution and learn the common law and how things ought to be. Okay. Let's see. Now, I mentioned earlier on our front page, we do have the paper presentment with an order to the United States Supreme Court. It was filed just this past Friday. I put it out into the mail. They'll be getting it tomorrow. And we copied a lot of people, and I also copied three or four more people than it's on this list, but they're outside of the government. But I'm just going to read very quickly through a paragraph or two here or there, then move on. But you can read the entire paper. I strongly advise people to read it. It's an education. It really will open your eyes to the court system and what's going on and what needs to be done to fix this court. So this is the most important thing we could be doing, is coming to a proper education to understand what we, the people, must do. And we need people behind this. We need people to try to get this viral. You know, get people out to this page. You can come up here and just click on the URL, do a copy on the URL, and send that out as a link for a direct to this page. Or you can send them to the front page on nationallibertyalliance.org, which is probably the easiest, and just click on the button, tell them presentment with an order to the United States Supreme Court. We need to get this viral, if possible. It's up to the people to do the work, you know, and get this stuff out there. But anyway, this is a national emergency, an extraordinary presentment and an order, and an extraordinary indictment, important indictment upon the federal judiciary. And it starts off that Bartort judges have twice ignored and concealed our writ quo warranto. This presentment is our final demand, after which enforcement will be implemented. The Supreme Court justices took an oath to guarantee a Republican form of government. We, the people, demand a declaratory judgment to restore our courts of justice under the law of the land. In a court case, Downs versus Bewell, it was written, it will be an evil day for American liberty if the theory of government outside of supreme law finds lodgment in our constitutional jurisprudence, and it indeed has. Matter of fact, it's been replaced with civil law. No higher duty rests upon this court than to exert its full authority to prevent all violations of the principles of the Constitution. Notice to agent is notice to principal. That's 18 U.S.C. subsection. That's Montana Code annotated 2023. But we also have 18 U.S.C. subsection 2071, which is applied upon them. Whoever willfully and unlawfully conceals, removes, mutilates, shall be fined under this title or in prison not more than 3 years or both. Now, again, I'm not going to read much of this because, again, it'll take a lot of time. I am thinking about doing short half-hour pieces of this to read the whole thing out, put it up on YouTube and Rumble, and we'll also post it on our website, maybe create a page. So I'm thinking of doing that because it is a good educational piece, and unfortunately people don't seem to want to read anymore. And if we're going to want to get our liberty back, and we want to get our nation back, and we want to get control, and we want to have government by consent, we better start reading. So we have to become readers again. Videos are good, though, to some degree, but that cannot be the place of your education. We got to go back to the written word. So anyway, we have the enforcement here. We've got the Judge Advocate General, and that is the Navy. We got the National Guard Bureau. We've got NORAD. We've got the Air Force. We've got General Joseph Berger of the Army, and so these are the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different potential enforcements. I think the key may be the National Guard and NORAD. So, but in any event, they all got it. We copied the President, Donald Trump. We copied Tom Fenton, Donald Trump Jr., Robert F. Kennedy, Cash Patel, Senator Mike Lee, Senator Ted Cruz. These are all friendly people to us, people who are trying to make a difference and change things and bring us back. Senator John Kennedy, Senator Rand Paul, Senator Josh Hawley, Senator J.D. Vance, Congressman Mike Johnson, Congressman Jim Jordan, Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor, Congressman Matt Gaetz, Congressman Steve Scalise, Congressman Andy Briggs, Congressman Chip Roy, Congressman Eli Crane, Congressman Corey Mills, Congressman Jim Banks. And then, of course, we have the table of contents, which gives sort of an overview of what we're doing here and what this is about. And then we go into the extraordinary presentment. I'll read a paragraph or two. Comes now the constituted unified United States common law grand jury, here and after we the people, for an unprecedented presentment and an order to the United States Supreme Court, being the overseers of the federal judiciary, Article 3, Section 1. let me just scroll down again. This is this particular paper is 128 pages long, but we do have attachments onto it. Of course, it makes it a lot longer than that. We attached our writ quo warranto, which we had originally filed, so that's in here also. And I think that's 28 pages, if I recall. Let me see. Okay, let's see. This is the writ quo warranto. Oh, 13 pages. Right. But what I would like to really take a quick look at, and which is the end of our paper in conclusion. I'm just going to read that. It's about 5 paragraphs. It shouldn't take long to read. But there's a lot here to read, a lot here to learn. It's an education in itself, okay? And it also will teach people who are studying the law and maybe taking the course, Court Access in the Common Law. Again, this is a good way to learn how to write by reading other people's works under the common law particularly. So in conclusion, Federalist number 78, page 525 in Marbury versus Madison demands that the United States Supreme Court is to say what the law is, and under Article 4, Section 4, is to guarantee a Republican form of government. Any Supreme Court justice who does not comply with his oaths to the Constitution of the United States wars against that Constitution and engages in acts in violation of the supreme law of land. That Supreme Court justice is engaged in acts of treason. Our founding documents were built upon 8 ancient biblical principles ordained by we the people, where we established sound government built upon self-evident truths and the laws of nature and of nature's God, and where we the people declared that all men are created equal with certain unalienable rights bestowed upon by us by God, and that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is the paramount, and that government is to preserve these blessings of liberty, serving we the people via our consent. And where we preserved our right to alter, abolish, and provide new gods, and that's our intention here, to provide new gods for our future security when government becomes destructive to these ends. This is our intention within this extraordinary presentment. We the people in the preamble declared that in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, did ordain and establish the Constitution for the United States of America. Whereas the federal judiciary has established injustice, turning our courts into dens of thieves where there is no peace, and by their very every action ignore and trample upon our liberties, which is a gift of God that cannot be abolished. Therefore, it is a solemn duty of the United States Supreme Court to speak. Whereas silence can only be equated with fraud, where there is a legal or moral duty to speak, or where an inquiry left unanswered would be intentionally misleading, we the people demand that the United States Supreme Court declare the restoration of our courts of justice, where no judge may enter or intercept with their repugnant summary judgments or impose their will in any way upon our courts of justice, where a magistrate will uphold the will of the tribunal, being we the people, that we ourselves will administer to. We the people stand at the precipice of losing our natural law republic, as de facto President Obama said during the 2016 White House Correspondents' Dinner, where he predicted Hillary Clinton presidency in 2017 and said, the end of the republic has never looked better. So you understand where their final way, where they were finally to be if Trump didn't win that election in 2016. This shows the intent of their de facto democracy. Therefore, we the people are resolved, and as our founding fathers, we too pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. And if you refuse to act, the blood of innocent patriot Americans will be on your hands, and we will require of you what justice demands. Nuremberg. Presented and ordered under seal, dated October 10th, 2024, signed and sealed by the grand jury foreman. Okay, and again, this paper here, this writ quo warranto, very good read, very powerful, educational. It'll help teach you to write. Everything in this paper will teach you to write because we cover a lot of situations in here. Jury, we talk about jury stacking and tampering, you know. Let me just go up real quick, and then we're going to go to the people. We only got a couple people in the queue anyway, but let me just go through this list of things that we do cover. Well, we got the presentment, of course. Let's see, people's demand, purpose, exposition of our presentment, the abrogation of the United States of America. We talk about that, the abrogation of the law of the land, republic versus democracy, king of our courts of the law and equity, prayer and Bible in school, right of the people to keep and bear arms, and why governments disarm people. Writ habeas corpus, our right to that, right to practice law, fully informed grand juries, fully informed pettijuries, jury stacking and tampering, the 12 lies, jury orientation, the fox in the henhouse, the balance of power, George Washington's farewell address, the 10th Amendment rendered null, Anti-Federalist number 62, number 9, number 51, number 62, the 13th Amendment, seditious conspiracy, systematic destruction of America, Title 26, direct tax, judicial comity versus common law, summary proceedings are null and void, rules of common law of the courts, maxims or principles of the common law requires a sheriff, historical background of the sheriff, sheriff empowered by God, oaths and bonds, faithful performance, ordered and adjudged. Okay, so those are a lot of the things we talk about, and again, anybody taking the course should read this paper, but I'll tell you, anybody hearing this, my voice at this point should be reading this paper because it's an education. It'll liberate you. It'll give you an understanding of what's wrong in the courts and how we can fix it. And that, of course, is our intention, and that's where we stand. We stand at that precipice. Okay, with that, let me see if there's anything else I want to cover before we get into the other people here as far as questions are concerned. Missing that. Okay, here it is. Recent content, recent. Okay, for those who don't know, if you miss a Monday night program or part of it and you want to listen to it, of course, we do have it up under the Monday Night Called under with MP3s. Well, you can go to today's issues, which is probably the best place to go to, and come to the NLA Open Forum videos. The MP3s are really good for downloading and, you know, putting it on your MP3 player or your phone or whatever and listening to it when you drive or whatever in the background. But if you can sit down and watch, of course, you can then get the video. So under today's issues, you could just click on the Monday, NLA Monday Open Forum videos. And the latest one is up here first, of course, and it goes backwards. So we've got quite a few here that people can catch up on or learn if you've missed. Let's see what else I wanted to cover on this. Handbooks, videos, and tools. We went under that. We showed you that. Starter Committee is Safe. Now, we did some videos, and I'm adding these videos here as we go along. Under Starter Committee of Safety, I mean, you could follow the breadcrumb trail by clicking on that, reading this page here, and then come on, clicking to find or start your Committee of Safety in your county, reading through that and setting things up to find the Committee of Safety or starting one. It gives you a basic outline, sort of a an outline of what is required and what we're doing. A synopsis is a better word. And then click here for County Committee Step-by-Step Organization Handbooks. Now, you can get straight to this page here by going to Starter Committee of Safety and click right there, Handbook Videos and Tools. Okay, but let me just read this real quick, and this will be the last thing I'm trying to cover. The following series of videos will teach succinctly how to introduce, create, and run a committee of safety. These videos or PowerPoints should be played as you organize your committee of safety. You should print out copies of the charter and resolutions to hand out to all committee members, and after playing the video, discuss additional information you might want to add. You will find that as time goes on, you will add addendums to your charter and resolutions, especially to resolutions. These video PowerPoints and many other videos, PDFs, MS Words, and many, many more tools are available below the videos for download. After forming a committee of safety, some members will join after you have played some or all of these instructional videos. Send your new members to nationallibertyalliance.org/handbooks to catch up and be informed on the Committee of Safety's plan, structure, and duties for each of the subcommittees. So the first one was the presentment of the government by consent. Second one is discusses on how to and goes through a charter. The third one is proposed resolutions. The next one is meeting the sheriff, the plan to do that. The next one is the political committee, how to structure a political committee and how all that works. And then we have tremendous amounts of information. Most of this is downloads of these videos, whether it be PowerPoint or video itself, and some other things down in here also. And then underneath that, tremendous amounts of tools and videos and different ways to do things and just lots of information. But this page should be thoroughly read through. Videos should be watched and played at meetings in order to form your Committee of Safety properly and to put together your charter and resolutions and to make sure that you got a committee of correspondence goes and that person's name should be listed up on a directory so people who join National Liberty Alliance can find you. So with that, I guess that ends it for what I'm trying to get out tonight. We'll take our first caller here tonight. It's Mark. Let me see. You got the mic, Mark. Can you please tell us your state you're calling from? Mark? Mark, you got a real problem with your voice. What you might want to do, you're going to want to repeat whatever you're listening in on. Let me see if I can mute you. Mark, you're coming in very distorted, so maybe reboot your... Hold on. Maybe you can reboot your app and then come back in. And I'll pick you up as soon as you come back in. We can't understand you. Go into your next call. Okay, couldn't understand you, Mark. We're going to the next call. Reboot your app and then come back in. When I see you in the queue, I'll pick you right up first. We only got two other people here now anyway. Ross, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
John.
Yes.
Do we still have an Article 4 citizenship?
I'm sorry, say something about an Article 4 what?
Citizenship.
What about it?
Do we still have that one, or the 14th Amendment replaced the citizenship?
Well, let me go read a little bit of Article 4 concerning citizenship. We got the new states shall be admitted. Congress has the power to dispose. Every state, union, public. I'm not finding this. I know it's in here. What's your question about it? Because the people gave, through Article 4, I believe it is, I believe that's where we find it, we gave them the power to naturalize people to become citizens. That's done at the federal level. It's never done on the state level. There's no authority on the state level, just the federal level. We gave that power to the federal government. But once they become a citizen of the United States, they're a citizen of every single state of the Union, plus the state they live in. We read that before. I'm pretty sure it was under Article 4.
Yes, you can also buy your birth certificate or through your affidavit of birth. You say what state you were born in, and that's how you claim the state citizenship.
Well, yeah, when you're born in the United States, whatever state you're in, you're automatically a citizen of the United States and the state that you live in.
Yes, that the state is the first thing you were born in before the United States. That's your citizenship.
again, look at, I know people make a big thing about this United States citizen. I used to make a big thing too when I was ignorant to these things. But when I did my proper education, I started reading things and trying to learn these things, then it became pretty clear that we the people gave the power to the federal government to create citizens of the United States. And we are born as a citizen of the United States and the state we live in. That's an important fact here, because it means that as we get into our vehicle and the wheels of a car goes over the borderline of another state, we have all the rights of every citizen in that state and the next state and the next state and the next state. We go through all 50 states, we have the rights in all of them. Okay? I'm trying to find the way I can read that. I'm pretty sure it was in Article 4. We were looking at it before. We were reading it. What section is it? Do you remember?
Clause, you mean? What clause?
Article 4, what section is it talks about becoming a citizen? I'm looking for it myself right now. I don't know why I'm not seeing it. Maybe it's a different... No, I'm pretty sure it's Article 4. Oh, you know what? It might have been in Article 1 in this section. Because, let's see. I don't know if anybody else knows where it's at. They can pipe in, tell me where it's at. Let's see. Senate. No. All right, I don't remember where that's at, but if you could find it, you can let me know. Meanwhile, we're going to move to our next call, unless you have something else that you want to make a point. We now have a couple of people in the call, in the queue now. So, Ross, anything else? I'm sorry?
We possibly become Amendment 12. We probably will go in that situation, because if the Democrats get control of these both chambers of Congress, they were disqualified Trump from being elected.
Right. Something about disqualifying Trump and being elected. What are you claiming disqualifies him? Or they claim that disqualifies him?
Oh, he did insurrection.
The what?
Insurrection.
Yeah, there was no insurrection. Well, there was an insurrection, but it was from the left and not the right. So that will be clarified very soon. It'll be cleared up. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I'm going to skip over to Mark that we missed. So hang on a second. Mark, you got the mic. Go right ahead. What state you're from?
Indiana.
Indiana, go ahead. We are going to understand you now. Go ahead.
Okay. A week ago, we had our COS meeting, and we voted on our officers, and we watched the two videos on charter and resolution. And okay. And I asked anybody if they had any, any additions or subtractions based on the CAN charter and resolution, and nobody did. So I told everybody that I was going to type it all up, put our county in there and the date, and then I'll go around and get it signed. Well, in the last week, I've been contacted that some people think, well, why do you need a charter? Why do you need a resolution? Why do you need a vow? Why do you need a seal? And why do you need to record it at the recorder's office? So I didn't really have an answer for all of that until I would have to research it. But there's a lot of questions. But
that's the proper way to do everything and anything. You're creating an you're creating an organization. It's not a corporation. It's not necessarily a trust either. But it is an organization of the people. It is purely a committee of safety, and a committee of safety has to have a charter. What is a charter? A charter is the direction and the purpose of that committee of safety, what their intentions are. Okay, and you will add, as time goes on and people become more and more educated and more understanding and of the problems, the situations, and they may want to add, I'm sure they're going to add things to their charter as we want to do more. So the charter really lays out the plan. It's a necessity. You can't get away from it. The other thing is the resolutions. What you are seriously going to, this is the way we're going to operate. You know, these are the resolutions we become, we're clear on. And when you go through each one of those resolutions, again, I just put together what is necessary to begin with, because we have to be constructed similarly from county to county and state to state, because we need to operate between county and county and state to state. You also, there's some new ones to put up, and that's the next one you're going to want to share with your Committee of Safety is the sheriff thing, because the sheriff is really going to lay the groundwork on how you're going to bring that sheriff under the control of the people. And none of these sheriffs, or most of these sheriffs anyway, are not under the control of the people. And a lot of them are totally ignorant to the law. And they operate unlawfully, and they're not exercising the right and the authority that we gave them. Not the rights, but the authority that we gave them. We vested them with certain powers, and they're not executing. They don't even know those powers, and they're not executing those powers. So when you look at the resolution, we and even in the charter, we put some information about the sheriff in both, and we made it clear that what we need to do to bring our sheriff back under the will of the people and to make sure we have an educated sheriff, if he refuses to educate, refuses to be obedient to the law, and refuses to honor his oath, then we're going to remove him. Okay, and it was very important to put that into our resolution and into our charter. We have a little bit in the charter, a little bit in the resolution. And when we package that together and put our seal to it and present that to the sheriff at the first meeting, which should be 10 minutes or less, no more than that, you just call the sheriff, you let him know we're a committee of safety in the county, a group of people want to exercise our right of government by consent. We'd like to meet with you, Sheriff, maybe get 10 minutes and give you some information about us, who we are and what we're doing. So you get that appointment, you go, you know, you don't want to go with too many people. 10 people is nice, but 5, 4, 3 or whatever is fine too. But you don't want to go too overwhelming. So you go with a group of people, you present them with a copy of the book, Government by Consent. You present them with a copy of the book of the Sheriff Handbook, Common Law Handbook. You present him, you want to package your charter and your resolutions. You want to have it bound. If you don't have a binding machine, you can go down to Staples or Office Max. You're going to be doing a lot of binding. For $40-$50, you buy a binder, and you put the binder on the edge, and you can bind your own materials. So you bring it in a book, okay? So you hand them the book. You get them the handbooks. You also want to get copies of the Constitution, the NCCS dot... it's not org. What is it? Eric, do you remember what that is, or anybody? NCCS. Oh, .net. That's what it is. NCCS.net. Yep. And you can order like 100 handbooks of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, for I think it's $59, $59.95. I think it is, literally shipped and everything included, taxes. They ship it to you, so you can get them pretty cheap. You want to give the sheriff probably about 50, not 50, you know, 20 or 30 handbooks, okay, because you're expecting him to hand it out to his deputies, okay? You also want to give him a copy. When you give him the copy of the sheriff's handbook, for instance, let me open that up real quickly. You come under welcome. Let me see, welcome books. Okay, you want to do this in regular book form, because people take things more serious. It's more powerful when they see it in a written word in a handbook form. Okay, but we have the County Sheriff Common Law Handbook. Okay, so this handbook here, you're going to want to give him probably 3 to 5, depending, at least 3. You want one to him, one to his undersheriff, and at least one more to any other officer. Maybe they have a lieutenant or somebody or whatever. I bought 5 for my sheriff, so... but anyway, you hand them all this stuff, and then that's when you tell them, look, we'd like to invite you to our next Committee of Safety, but we want to give you time to read all, go through all this literature and stuff, and who we are as a as you know, we the people, in as a committee of safety. So you might not do the very next meeting, you know, because you want to give him at least 30 days, at least 30 days. So if you have a committee of safety coming up a week or two after that you're presenting this, and so you go to the next one and you give them 5-6 weeks to go through all that stuff, that's plenty of time. And that's when you may have to play hardball with the sheriff. And I did write some questions that I thought were appropriate, and people can make their own questions and add a lot more to that, use some of these questions, whatever they want to do. But all of that, I believe, is under that video, which is... go back. Okay, where is that? Okay, in any event, let me get here. Start a committee of safety, handbooks, videos, and tools. Okay, this video here, this is the one you want to play at your next meeting. And you want to bring make sure you get all your paperwork together, your books and everything. Because after you listen to this video, you're going to want to meet with the sheriff within a week or two. So you're going to make the call, try to get an appointment, and then you're going to give them 6 weeks to go through it. And this will lay everything out. And I'm sure, you know, when you bring your minds together as a group of people, free and independent, you'll come up with a lot of thoughts and other ideas you want to quiz the sheriff on. But the key thing is this, is he, and you're going to give him access to come to the website, nationallibertyalliance.org, and he can come under education and click on court access in the common law. And he needs, and his deputies, everyone should come out here and take this course. Free of charge. We don't charge the sheriffs for any of this. So they can come out here. Once they click the buttons and join, let us know that they're a sheriff or a deputy, then this will automatically be open to them. And then they will learn what everything they need to know under the common law, how the court system works, how the process works, what his duty and what is required of him as a sheriff. Okay? So that's what I suggest to do next.
Yes. Another question somebody asked is, what gives the charter authority?
The people.
Okay. Okay. Listen,
are free and independent. One of them, the critical mindsets that you have to remember is we the people ordained and established. It says so. We wrote it in the Constitution, the preamble. We the people ordained. Who ordains? A king ordains. We the people ordained and established. We are the lawmakers. We wrote the law. Now, we're all under God's law, of course. You know, we didn't write that law. But we wrote the law that controls the government that we have control over, that we have government by our consent. You see, we have to have these free minds. We have to think free and then start acting free. They're not the boss of us. We're the boss of them.
That's okay. What's the significance of the seal?
Oh, the seal, well, a seal gives authority. A seal is, when you have a seal, it's saying, first of all, this is authoritative. This is a group that is authoritative, okay? It also bypasses the need to go get, a notary in order to notarize it. We don't need that because we have honor, okay? And that's the purpose of the seal. We are a people of honor. We're putting our seal and our mark on it with the signature of the main officers of the committee, which, by the way, could be changed at any time, and you got to remember that.
Yes.
So
yes.
And they have no power or authority over anyone. They just keep things flowing. That's all they do. And they have certain responsibilities, though, that they have to attend to. And if they can't attend to those things, then someone else has to take those positions. So it's an honor thing, number one. Jefferson had a seal. He speaks about a seal. He talked about what Benjamin Franklin brought together. He said, I like that. That's what I want. And he changed the seal to what Benjamin Franklin had. It's an honor.
Last question. What's the recording it at the recorder's office? The charter and the resolution.
Yeah, you're filing it in the county to let it be known we are here. This is who we are.
Okay.
And this is our intentions. And so everybody now knows this is the intention of this committee of safety. We are here to exercise our unalienable right of government by consent. And we expect these government to be obedient to we the people in all things lawful. okay? And so we, of course, have to obey the law, too. We can't be ridiculous here, you know? So that's what the purpose of that is. And every time you visit, you visit the sheriff, you're letting him know exactly who you are, what you're doing, what your intentions are, and the resolutions you came up to the people. This is what we expect, and this is what we're going to do. And you do that to everything. You go to the school board, you hand it up there. You go to a town board, you hand it there. You go up to the legislators on the county level, you hand it there. When you collectively work with other county committees of safety within your state, and you go up to the legislators on the state level, you all hand it in there. And this prepares their knowledge to know who you are, what you're doing, by what authority we act. It goes to all the purpose. This has to be done correctly, and we have to be uniform across the state and across the United States.
Thank you, John.
Okay, thank you, Mark. Appreciate it. Okay, let us take our next caller here. Let's see. We've got two more callers, so we may go over a little bit. Evelyn, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
I'm sorry. I didn't have a question. I made a mistake when okay. Thank you.
Okay.
And thank you very much this evening.
Okay. Okay, let us take our next person, which would be Anthony from Texas. Go right ahead. You got the mic. Anthony from Texas. 832 number. Calling again, Anthony from Texas. Last call for Anthony. Okay. Ross, you're on again. Only got a few seconds. I got Michael coming behind you, too, so.
I see. I just found SRT crossing section.
I'm sorry. Okay, section what?
Section 2 and clause 1, the very first clause.
Okay. So article, this is in article 4, right?
Yes.
Okay, the citizens of... Okay, the person charged, no person whose service. I don't see it. Let's see, discharge demand. It says here the citizens of each state shall be entitled to the privileges and immunities of the citizens in the several states. Is that what you wanted to look at?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's the key thing here. I don't like the fact that they use the word privileges, but that is what it is. It is a privilege from God, so maybe they were thinking under those terms. It certainly is not a privilege from the government, and that's an important point to be make sure that we understand. And immunities, we're immunities of the citizens in the several states. We're immune to all of their laws that they may make, regulations, statute. That has nothing to do with us.
And that's the problem. We like to say, like motor vehicle laws, that doesn't really apply to us. It says
right.
We want control.
That's right. That's jurisdictions unknown to us. They've taken it and pushed it far beyond what it is. It is a commercial code. It's traffic code for commercial activities. It has nothing to do with us.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Ross. Let's take our last caller here. We got Mike. You got the call, and you are from, what is that?
Michigan.
Michigan, yep, Go right ahead.
Yeah, yeah, John, just real quick here. Can I find Bill Thornton's lectures on common law on the website?
We do have that in our, I think, let's see. In our courses... I think we have it in our civics course. We have his stuff in our civics course. You might be able to find it. Let's see. I think we did audio. I don't remember whether we did video. We do have some of his videos. If we did his videos, you can probably find them under our... I think I moved a lot of that stuff to Rumble.
A lot of it, John. There's multiple lectures that I used to be able to find on the website, but I can't find them. That's all I'm asking.
Let me think about this a minute here. Maybe I can remember American history articles and essays. Law.
Something was moved.
Yeah, but You know what? I'll try to remember to look for that over during the week, and maybe you can bring it back up to me next Monday and see.
Okay.
If I can,
maybe I can find it myself.
One note about his work. Okay, he's done a lot of good work, but you know, he has does have a major flaw in his thinking. Okay, and that is really the fact that we are not the true sovereigns of the court. The true sovereign of the court is Jesus Christ. It's God. That's the sovereign of our court. That is the will of the court, and his will is justice. So, and justice, we know in our hearts what justice is. So it's not something that we have to struggle with. It. We know when what is right and what is wrong. We know the difference.
He's the master of natural law. The law of nature.
Right, exactly. So, but, you know, Bill Thornton teaches that he's the sovereign of the court. Well, we represent the sovereign of the court. It's better to be put that way. But his work is good, you know. That's why we do keep it up there. But I do like to make that point. Okay?
Okay, I'll search for it. Thanks a lot, John.
Okay, Michael. Thank you. Okay, that brings us to the end of our program tonight. Thanks for everyone for coming. And again, let's get the word out on this paper on our front page. It's extremely important. I'm hoping to get this viral. We've sent it to a lot of good people that maybe may take a look at what we're doing here and start to push it from their end. And people who, you know, we even sent it to Trump, of course, the president, and we sent it to Donald Trump Jr. You know, he's pretty active, and when he sees something that his father should know, that he thinks he may not know, he does get a little pushy with his father, so maybe that'll happen with us. But we do have to get viral going here. We have not hit critical mass. We have, let's see how many members we have. It's been a while since I looked at this. I know it's around 11,000. It's 11,562 members at this point in time. So, you know, we're growing little by little, but we need that critical mass. We need that pump. And we need to get this out there. We need to get these committees of safety everywhere. Right now, we have 191 committees of safety in process. But we need 3,130, roughly, you know, about 3,000 of them. Okay, with that, good night, everybody. Thanks for coming. Lord willing, see you next Monday. And coming to our Bible study on Wednesday, 7:30, same room right here. Good night.